Daddy, where do
Radio. Good morning and welcome to this episode of Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. Thank you for listening. On this show, listeners learn about people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light, and those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light. You hear about it in the news, but what do you really know about the impact of bullying on our youth today? Isn't it something we all dealt with during our school years to some degree? What about human trafficking? That only occurs with any prevalence in third world countries, right? You might be shocked to learn how common this practice is right here in the United States of America and how thoroughly it devastates the lives of its victims. My guest today, author Darcy Gudger, tackles both of these issues in her Young Adult Guarded series, which consists of two published books to date, Spin and Toss. Darcy has a BA in psychology from Houghton College in New York and an MA in special education from the University of Colorado in Denver. Darcy has 15 years' experience as a competitive collar guard director. Good morning and welcome to the show, Darcy.
Hi, Patty. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. It's a little chilly down here today, but that's the way I like it, so I'm not complaining.
Yeah, we have a little dusting of snow. And one thing I have to correct is my college, my bachelor's is from Houghton College. It's probably one of the most mispronounced colleges in the world, but it's Houghton College in Western New York. Go Highlanders!
And I do apologize because I meant to ask you before the show started
okay.
How to pronounce that. So that's entirely on me, Darcy, and thank you for the clarification.
I was just saying that's fine because, you know, when you go to Houghton, everybody mispronounces the name that's not aware of Houghton. So it's no big deal. We're used to it.
The sad fact of the matter is I was born and raised in New York, so I should probably know that.
It is a very small town that has more cows than people.
Yes, yes. Darcy, we had originally planned to do this show a couple of months back, and as listeners know, I have been plagued with all of these technological problems from a messed up computer to all kinds of stuff with my internet. Back at the time that we were going to do the show, the big event coming up was the eclipse. The total eclipse of the sun. And I just wanted to bring that up because I remember you were pretty excited and you were also a little bit apprehensive about what was going to happen because your town happened to be one of the towns that had 100% totality. So I'm curious to know, how did all that play out? How did it go up there?
It was very interesting. I feel very blessed that Casper, Wyoming was in the path of totality. And yes, there was a lot of apprehension. I helped out with a friend and her store, Cadillac Cowgirl in Casper. If you ever come up, it's a great store. Nobody knew what to expect because the event was unprecedented. But it wasn't nearly as crowded as we thought it would be. It went very smoothly. The people who planned the events for the city of Casper and surrounding areas did an amazing job. The visitors behaved themselves quite well. And the eclipse itself was probably one of the most amazing things. I was able to watch it from my backyard with my entire family. My husband came home from work. I had adopted sister come up from Denver to watch it, and she's a photographer. She took some time-lapse photos, and the moment that the eclipse locked in, that shadow went over the sun, I mean, it was, you just couldn't help but just throw your hands up and praise the Lord because it was just so amazing. And for the longest time, it's like, well, it doesn't feel too much different. You feel the darkness coming, but it was in the last 5 seconds that all of a sudden this shadow just swept the earth, just from one side to the other, and it was incredible. And then it went totally dark, and it was just all of a sudden the sun, it was, if there was a sound effect, it would have been meeing, and this ring just formed around, and you were able to look without your unprotective glasses. The other amazing thing is that there was a 360-degree sunrise, pinkish sky all the way around for 360 degrees. Being in Wyoming, And we have a nice flat horizon view. So we were able to see the 360-degree sunrise, something we'll probably never experience again in my lifetime. So it was incredible. The people trying to get back to Denver, it took about 12 hours or more to get from Casper to Denver, and that's usually a four-hour drive. I'd hate to think about the bathroom situation and what happened along the highway, but I am just glad that I was at home. I didn't have to go anywhere for it, but it was an amazing experience, one that I'll never forget.
Yeah, I have a note here on my notes that about the eclipse, because like I say, we were going to do the show earlier, and I thought, oh, I've got to ask her about that. So now let's get to the meat of our interview here, Darcy. It's so good to have you here today.
Yeah.
Well, Darcy, I know
you're
a writer, and you did put writing on the back burner for quite a while. Why was that?
Well, again, starting at childhood, I was the kid when you were told to write a story with your 20 spelling words, I would not write a paragraph or two. I would write 50 pages.
really into the writing thing as a young person then?
I was. I was obsessed with stories and telling stories and writing stories. Even when I was totally bored out of my mind in some of my classes in middle school, my friends and I would pass tablets around and we would write novels. And I would write a chapter and pass it to my friend, and we would just pass these things around. We did it all the way through high school. So the classes I was really bored in, and I won't mention which ones they were, but I would sit there and write stories instead of listening.
Sure.
But I just assumed that, you know, to be a writer, you had to go and study diagramming sentences, and I did not do well. I hated English class. Hated grammar because it didn't make sense to me the way it was presented. Now I absolutely love it, which is really strange, but I could tell you why in a few minutes. But I just didn't do anything for the longest time. I just went to college, and even when I was in college, when I got bored, I would borrow a friend's word processor and I'd start writing stories on it, and or whenever I went home, because it was right before the time when everybody had their own computer. I graduated from college in 94, so there were computers in the computer lab. I actually was using a Mac SE30 at the time, and I would write stories. Nothing ever happened to them. I never finished them, but I couldn't help myself. I would just write. I'd go home for Christmas. I'd sneak down to the basement in my dad's computer late at night, and he had MS-DOS. And I would go into there and open up the WordPerfect program, and I would just start writing these random stories. And I would just write and write and write. And it was just something I couldn't help doing, but I never thought of doing anything with it until I was a teacher at Sheridan High School in Colorado. And one of the ways to engage my students with special ed is I decided, you know, I'm going to write stories about the students. So I wrote crazy stories about the students, and I would spend my planning periods writing while my colleagues would come in and see me there laughing and having a grand old time, me and my computer. And they said, well, Darcy, you know, if money was no object, what would you do? I said, you know, I would be a writer. And we actually went around the room and said, okay, in a perfect world, it was a lunchtime, and the paras were in there, the other special ed teachers were like, well, what would you do if money was no object and it was a perfect world? What would you do? And mine was a writer, another girl, she would have been an interior designer. And the odd thing is that it was everything but teaching. But
yeah.
Anyway, teaching is very difficult these days. But anyway, that kind of fell in the back of my mind. I started working on Spin. At that time, it was around 2003. As I was sitting in the cafeteria, these characters just popped into my mind. The name Kisri hit me, and I'm like, where did that come from? And all of a sudden, I saw her whole family. It just appeared in my head as I was doing lunch duty, bored out of my mind, trying to make sure that there weren't any fights. I mean, this was an inner city school, and making sure that nobody died during lunch on my watch. And
yeah, no fights, no choking.
Plotting.
Yeah.
I just plotted. This story happened in my head. There was an incident with a colleague that happened in the school, not the same as what happened in Spin, but something related where there were false accusations made, a teacher was put on, because the students didn't like them. That's just that's what students did to teachers and still do to teachers that they don't like. They just try to get them fired by accusing them. The teacher was eventually found to be completely innocent, and because the student's stories, none of them match. But he ended up moving out of state eventually because it damaged his reputation. And that kind of inspired me for the – it made me mad, for one. It was just the unfairness of it all, that these kids have that much power in today's education system. And that's kind of what drove the central plot, because I had this family in mind, I had these characters in mind, but I didn't have a plot. And when that situation happened with a colleague, I'm like, okay, I've got my plot. And I, of course, created my own plot. I mean, it was inspired by that, but it's not reflective of that in any way. I mean, I came up with my whole, you know, spin is pretty, it's fictional as far as that goes, but it was inspired by that. And at the same time, I started having health problems. Being a high school special ed teacher is very stressful, and it got to the point where a doctor said, you have a choice to make, either your career or your health. Pick one. At the time, my husband was doing well in his job, architect, everything, and he's like, you know what, let's focus on your health, because health stuff is expensive.
Yes.
I had no idea what road I was headed down that would nearly destroy us when it comes to health. But I resigned my job. I was a tenured teacher. I resigned my job from Sheridan. However, I stayed on for another 5 years at that school as the color guard director, because I loved the students. I loved color guard. And I stayed there until they, unfortunately, Colorado started slashing and burning and cutting fine arts. They cut visual arts. They cut the marching band. They cut all music.
Mm-hmm.
It was horrible, and I lost my job because they cut my program. And it was pretty much hitting all the schools. And from Sheridan, then I went to Columbine, and I was there for a while. And then I ended up at Evergreen until I moved to Wyoming. But I did stay involved in the public school education system through Color Guard because I loved students, but it was a way to get my student fix and, you know, deal with my health. And so I started writing, and then when my son was 2, and I believe, I'm trying to remember what year that was, probably 2008, I was walking down the stairs carrying a pile of books, plotting chapter 9 of Spin. I remember this, and I wasn't paying attention. He was laying on his belly on the stairs, sucking on Thomas the Tank Engine. And I tried to step over him. I caught the edge of the stair with my right foot, slid down the stairs. My left leg did a hyperflex behind me, and I tore my meniscus. That's pretty much what started a downward spiral with me that, you know, almost bankrupted my family. And that's when writing really went into the back corner, because I ended up having to have 3 surgeries. The third one was a very, very traumatic reconstructive surgery. It took me 2.5 to 3 years to get back to normal, but it was a 2-year recovery period. I had to learn how to walk again. When you're on those kind of drugs and pain and all of that stuff, there's no way that you can write fully out. I've had a bunch of, oddly enough, I had a whole series of back-to-back catastrophic health situations, whether they were injuries, car accidents. Even in 2003, I was going to a state championship at Columbine, and there was a snowstorm. I ended up, my car, I drove into a pole, and I had a mild traumatic brain injury.
Oh my goodness.
That's why writing was on the back burner, and it's why it took me about 13 years to get Spin done and published.
Mm-hmm.
I had a lot of challenges, but then, you know, I tried to quit multiple times, and every time I tried to quit writing, it would come back and bite me. It's like the Lord would bring somebody into my life, whether it would be my dear friend Kim Woodhouse, who is a best-selling author, who would threaten to kill me if I didn't write, or my pastor who at Bear Valley Church in Lakewood, who threatened, his name is Jim Walters, he would threaten to put a boot where the sun doesn't shine if I didn't write. So I had a lot of people holding me accountable and not letting me give up really when I wanted to, because 13 years is a really long time to work on one story amidst a lot of life trials. And then I'm not even talking about the time when my husband lost job after job, because after 2001, 9/11, and then, you know, all of these economic crashes, job losses. So my family has been through a lot of dark times. I would say most of my life. I've spent my life, you talk about dark places, I have spent most of my adult married life in very, very dark places. But part of it is my own, a lot of the circumstances I had no control over, and I'm at the point now where I can recognize that. There's no way I could have prevented some of the things that have happened to me. They just happened, and God, for some reason, allowed them to happen in my life. He just allowed it. And I must be a very slow learner, because He kept taking me around the block, because when we would have these situations, these crises that would put us into all kinds of turmoil, health-wise, financial-wise, my reaction is, how do I solve this? Because I am an ENFP on the Myers-Briggs profile, which is probably one of the most rare. Most authors are INFPs. They're those introverted people. I tend to be more on the extroverted side, which makes me a very rare bird. But I'm also that, okay, how do I figure this out? How do I solve it? It's my problem. I must solve it. And then I would make my plan, set my roadmap on the wall and say, okay, Lord, here's my plan. I'm going to do this. And so He would sit up there just putting His hand over His face going, oh, Darcy, Darcy, Darcy. And I would go gung-ho at my plan. Okay, all right, I've got all this medical debt. Well, maybe I need to get another job. And I've worked up to three, maybe four jobs at once. And, you know, the only thing that does is it puts you in the hospital. You get sick.
Yeah.
And then you end up having bills that are higher than the money that you make from the four jobs that you were trying to hold down.
Right.
So pretty much I think it was a wrestling match between the Lord and I about who's in control of your life.
Yes.
Who's your authority? Who are you submitting to? Are you submitting to your own ideas, or are you submitting to me? So a lot of it was just that wrestling over who's in control of my life. And, you know, I'm in a tough situation now due to health. Health has just been a plague now. And now I'm hitting, you know, over the age of 40, you hit some of those genetic things that pop up that you can say, thanks, Grandma. But instead of freaking out, instead of getting all upset, instead of pulling my hair out, oh, my word, how am I going to fix this? I'm like, okay, Lord, you see this. You're going to provide. You designed my body. You knew this was coming. You know what my DNA codes are. You know the situation. I'm going to just trust you this time instead of doing what I've done for the past 20 years that didn't work. So that's kind of from the darkness into the light. It's that complete surrender of just also letting go of what you think life should be. Also letting go of, I think there's this Americanized idea of Christianity. If we do what God wants, and if we serve the Lord, and if we don't do this, if we don't do drugs, sex and rock and roll, and, you know, I'm using that kind of as a blank analogy, but you know what I mean. Well, then God's going to bless me, and my life's going to be wonderful, and that's
and it's not
the way it works. I mean, people don't realize that the blessing in the New Testament is suffering. It is suffering, and the reason why God allows us to suffer is because He's trying to draw us to Him and get us to a point where we don't rely on ourselves, and that's what I've really learned. And even with my writing, I mean, I do struggle a lot with writing because I look at my friends. I've got friends on the best-selling list. I've got friends who get contracts and agents. I lost my agent when I had those years of health problems where for 2 years I couldn't touch a keyboard because I had to learn how to walk. Plus, I had to keep working. I did not stop working. I would go to work. I would go to color guard rehearsal and go to competitions on crutches. I was on crutches. I was not able to walk for months.
Goodness.
And I had to keep working because at the time my husband did not have a job. I was the only income, and it was not a lot. But, you know, God did provide. So writing just got put to the back burner. And sometimes, you know, when there's something with my son or a person, a friend needs something, I will go meet the needs of somebody and put my writing on hold. Probably not what agents and editors want to hear, but sometimes you just have to help a person.
Sometimes life gets in the way, Darcy. You have to live your life. I mean, you can't, as much as we'd love to, you can't live and breathe and eat writing, you know? You've got to have relationships.
No.
You've got to have friendships. You've got to have spiritual time. I mean, you've got to have all those things. And part of that spiritual time is helping and reaching out to others. So I think you're perfectly right
in
that.
And God blesses me. And God blesses me through that. And, you know, one of the things that I am known for in my writing that my bloodthirsty crit partners, we've been together for about a decade now. We're all multi-published authors. We started out with just Kim being the only published author. Now all of us are multi-published. But that's been our that's probably a whole nother show, because that's an exciting journey. But the thing that they say that I do really well is characterization. I really get people. I get relationships. I understand motivation of the characters in the stories, and they're very real. They come off the page. It's because I am about relationships. And when I wrote about teenagers in Spin and Toss, people are like, well, how do you get the teenagers so well? It's like, well, that's where I spend the majority of my time. I was spending like 60-plus hours a week with teenagers as their coach. Yeah. I spent more time than their teachers and their parents did. I observed everything, and I immersed myself in my my target audience at the time, and that's how I was able to develop and observe and watch. And I pulled off of their experiences. I pulled off of my experiences. So that's kind of how that goes. I'm a rare bird.
Darcy, there's a couple of things I really want to focus in on, because we've skirted around them, but we haven't really answered the question. First of all, give us a brief synopsis of your Spin and Toss books. What would make readers want to read them? What is the plot of your stories, briefly?
Okay, briefly, the plot of Spin. It's a story of a high school girl named Kisri Kelly who overhears a plot to take down her English teacher uncle, Mr. Plank. She is left with the decision, do I tell or do I not? Well, being kind of the bullied kid in school, she's overweight, kind of clumsy, she decides that it's best to just sit on it and let it pass, because who would believe the rumor anyway? The rumor blows up out of proportion. Her uncle loses his job. Everybody's lives spin out of control to the point where lives are even in danger. That is the plot of Spin.
Yes. And I know, because I read it, but other people didn't.
Yes. So Toss picks up where Spin leaves off. It is a story of Wendy Wetz, who is the antagonist of Spin. She and Kisri's younger sister are abducted. And the story is about their Wendy and Kisri's attempts to survive in the world of human trafficking. They're abducted into the world of human trafficking. At the same time, Kisri is desperately trying to find her younger sister, because she feels that it's her fault that all of this happened, because she and her sister got into a fight. And she gets the whole color guard. The color guard that antagonized her and tormented her in the first book comes and rallies around her. And this is where they learn to be a team. So they go from a very antagonistic group of girls to a very supportive group, because they decide, they see what's really important, that it's not about who's better at spinning a flag, rifle or saber or dancing. It's about building the relationships and supporting one another, and that it's a sisterhood, and that they will stick together even if they land themselves in jail. But it really delves into the world of human trafficking and explores that, as well as exploring what does a team look like. What is teamwork, and what is friendship?
And the next thing I wanted you to talk about, Darcy, because many of our listeners may not know, and I didn't know until I read the books, explain in a little bit more detail exactly what Color Guard does, what is their purpose, what kind of things do young people learn from it? And I know you know, because you've been, 15 years as a Color Guard instructor?
Instructor. Yes. I was an instructor. I also judged in the Color Guard circuit in Colorado. Color Guard, you probably see them on the field as the flags with the band, but Color Guard is its own competitive sport. You spin flags, rifles, and sabers, as well as dance. It incorporates all of those. And now you're trying to portray a role on the field while demonstrating skills in all four areas to music in a competitive venue. Color Guard is probably one of the last things out there that does not, you know, everybody's a winner, you know, participation trophies for all.
it really is competitive. You are trying to be the best team. You want to beat everybody else. It is still truly competitive. You are given a score for your team based on a rubric of skills. And Winter Guard International, which is based out of Ohio, has this wonderful rubric that has different scoring systems for different levels of groups. You have your really beginning groups all the way up to your world class groups, which are practically a professional level. I am on the board of Malachi Independent, which is based out of Colorado. They have an independent world team. My friend Jen has grown that team over the past decade, and she's got, I think she's flooring four teams within that particular organization this year. And she covers the different ranges from the beginning level all the way up to the professional level. So it offers students a chance to learn hard work. I think any boss, if you want to hire a really dedicated kid who knows what work ethic is, will push themselves through injury and illness to achieve something, you want to hire a kid from Color Guard or Marching Band. It is one of the last programs out there that really teaches kids to push through pain and discomfort and achieve at a very high level, pushes them beyond what they think they're capable of doing. Our rehearsals, I laugh at sports schedules, you know, 1 to 2 hour practices. Color Guards can rehearse anywhere from 8 to 12 hours, at least the top performing ones will. And they go year-round. It is a year-round sport. And you have to be in condition. You have to be flexible. You have to use your mind at the same time and portray a character on the floor. It's very creative as well. So I think it offers a lot for students. They have to learn time management because they have all these practices, yet they have to maintain their grades in school because if they don't meet eligibility requirements, they can't participate in a high school program. And same thing even with an independent. A lot of independent programs will not allow a high school kid to continue marching if their grades are failing in school.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
Hopefully their parents won't either. Mm-hmm. A lot of the kids in the professional level and our professional team at Malachi, we've got RNs, we've got BRNs, we've got paramedics, we have accountants, we have psychological counselor. These are people who are now in their professional. There's even a woman who's in her 50s who is marching on the world team because there is no age limit at that level. Her kids are all in college. What an inspiration. It's something, you know, Google Malachi Independent and some other groups and just look up Color Guard, look up Winter Guard International, WGI. It will blow your mind what these kids are capable of doing. But I just strongly believe in that that sport, and then it just gives young people training and ethics and values that they would not get otherwise in our, I think, snowflake, wimpy down world.
Well, Dorothy, at this point, I'm going to take what I call a little break. I just want to make listeners aware because we have some listeners that come in the middle of a show and don't know who or what they're listening to. So, listeners, you are listening to Step Into the Light this morning. I am your host, Patty Sheen. My guest is Darcy Gudger. Darcy is a multi-published author of two books to date, Spin and Toss. They are young adult novels. Darcy also has experience, 15 years experience as a competitive color guard director. That's what we were just talking about now. And Darcy is very passionate about this competition. And if you missed a part of the show and you listen back, you'll find that out. We've also talked about Darcy's writing journey, and there is more to come. But in the meantime, I want to make you aware that you can go to Patty Sheen, PattiSheen.com, which is my website, and there you will find a little synopsis of the show. You will find, links to any social media that Darcy may have, and you will also find a list of all of the previous shows that we have recorded. This show is archived, as are all of them, so if you missed a part of the show or you'd like to listen to it again or you'd like to refer someone to it, just go to pattysheen.com. There's a Blog Talk Radio tab there. You'll also find the last two or three shows on that very front page, but then there's a Blog Talk Radio tab that takes you to all of the shows that we have recorded to date. So I urge you to check out Darcy's information and also to listen to this show again, or like I say, refer other folks to it, or any of our other shows that we have. Okay, let's get back to Darcy. Darcy, it can be difficult in today's world, especially with young adults, excuse me, to manifest your faith in your work without sounding really preachy or just turning young people off. As soon as you mention the word God or church or the Bible, it's like, okay, I'm out of here. So how do you weave that into your stories in such a way that it maintains their interest?
What I do is I'm honest. I do not paint a picture of the world the way I wish it was. I paint a picture of the world the way it really is. When I was going through high school and through a lot of, I was bullied. Kisri Kelly is somewhat autobiographical.
so was I. So I'm right there with you.
And I have had people even in their 70s and 80s come up to me and say that they related to Kisri because they were bullied in school.
I'm honest.
And that's what I believe I find lacking in a lot of Christian fiction today. I think they're, and I think people, they want to escape. I get that. I understand that. But I am called to write reality. I write about the world the way it is because I wish I had an author to turn to who I could read, almost see myself on the page, and then see how the character overcame it. How did the character get through this conflict in her life? How did she get through it? But when even the bad people are kind of nice in a way, you know, they're, you know, excuse me, ma'am, but I must kill you now. I don't think the portrayal of reality, especially for young adults, I don't think that works. I think you need to be honest. I think you need to show the raw emotion on the page. The books that stick with me the most are ones that make me feel something. And I've been thinking a lot about this because I spend a lot of time researching, writing, and what makes a book a great book rather than, oh, that was good. I want to be a great writer. And I never stopped studying the craft of writing. In fact, I study the best authors out there. And I think the ones that stand out to me are the ones that really take me on an emotional roller coaster of a ride where I can feel, where I can cry, and my heart just aches. And you have to go into deep, dark places to create that. And also, how do you see the light? If it's bright and sunny, and you turn on a flashlight, nobody's going to notice the flashlight. You could stand in your front yard and dance around waving the flashlight everywhere. But if it is in the dark of night and you turn on the flashlight and you're dancing around your yard, people are going to see that light from far, far, far away. Sometimes you need to juxtapose the darkness against the light in order to see the light. That is how I achieve that in my storytelling. I also want to be honest about the fact, and it's interesting, my pastor is talking about this right now as we're studying the book of Matthew. There is a cost to following Jesus, that you don't just ask him to come into your life and be your savior so you can go to heaven and then just live however you want to. I have Kisri wrestling with the reality of, if I follow Christ and do what I know he wants me to do, I'm going to get my head stuck in a toilet. I'm going to get beaten up. Something bad's going to happen to me. And it's wrestling between, do I do the right thing and pay a price in this world, or do I ignore it and avoid trouble?
Yes.
And I find that as having spent many, many years, having grown up through public school myself, my own son is in public school. We have decided that he is in public school. And he's doing fine right now, but I believe that's where God wants him to be, and that's where God is calling my family to be involved, is in the public school system. My years and years and years in the public school system, I have seen so many kids who come from Christian families and I kid you not, the torment that some of these kids face is not just from peers, it's from teachers as well, who do not abide their family's belief system, and they are tormented. Now, I do believe in some cases the best thing to do is pull the kid out of school, because kids are not equipped to handle that kind of trauma. When I was growing up, there weren't other options. I grew up in rural Pennsylvania. There were no other options. I was stuck in this bullying
right.
situation. And to this day, I'm like, Lord, how did I survive that? How did my faith survive? But I had a very supportive family. My mother listened to my parents, my church rallied around me, prayed for me. I think there just was a lot of prayer that just sustained me somehow. But that's the kid that I'm really trying to reach, is the Christian kid who is in a public school situation. I'm not writing to the homeschooler or the kid that goes to a Christian school. I am writing to the Christian kid who is stuck in a public high school and his or her friends, because I
yes.
also want to reach kids who don't know the Lord. And if you're going to reach those kids again, you really have to be honest, because I tell you, they're teenagers have a truth-o-meter like nothing else.
Oh,
they
yeah.
can
oh, yeah.
sniff. When you are trying to candy coat something, pull the wool over their eyes, they know it right away. And
mm-hmm.
and pardon the phrase, but they consider it BS and they just toss it. So
yep.
you really have to toe the line of truth, and you have to portray life the way it is. And that's difficult, because, and this is another issue that I had with Spin, a lot of Christian publishers were like, whoa, we can't publish this. This is offensive. This is, you know, and I'm like, but that was my life. I mean, I watch
mm-hmm.
that's reality for a lot of people. And
yeah.
how does that
yeah.
make, you know, but again, they have their readers that they're targeting. It's a business. It is a business. They have to meet what their audience expects. Luckily, the Lord finally led me. I was about ready to give up. And I think it was 2 days into, I had decided, okay, Spin's done. I'm throwing it away. It's on the back burner. I was about ready to click and delete. When I get an email, and I think I posted something on Facebook about saying, you know what, I have spent 13 years on my life. Nobody wants this book. It just doesn't fit. Because for the secularist, it wasn't grungy enough. I didn't have sex
right.
and I didn't have cursing.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do? You know, there is that fine line. I want to portray reality without being gratuitous.
Exactly.
But I think I need to be honest. So I get, after posting, okay, I am throwing this away. I am going to delete the whole file, and I'm going to start in a new direction. I'm going to just start working on adult suspense, something a little less, you know, controversial. And that day I get an email from a publishing house, a small publishing house, Mountain View Publishers LLC out of Lititz, Pennsylvania, saying, send us your manuscript.
Wow.
We want to take a look at it. They took a look at it, and the next day, she's like, I read it from start to finish, didn't put it down, and I want to offer you a contract, and I want to get this published in 2 months. Can we do
oh,
that?
Oh, awesome.
I have never seen it such an – and it is traditionally published. I did not pay a dime for this. I do – you know, there's royalty. This is a traditional,
mm-hmm.
traditionally published book.
Yeah.
Through a small house. But they believed in my story. They said, this is a story that needs to go out there. It's going to be a hard sell, yes. But it is a story that we believe in. And they want all three of them. So I my goal is to get Catch done by the spring. And Catch continues. I have these character arcs of Kisri and Wendy. I follow them all the way through three books. And
yeah.
Catch is going to be the culmination of what is true sacrifice. What is sacrificial love? What does that
mm-hmm.
look like? And I'm going to explore that through kind of a wilderness survival story where I'm moving my characters into Wyoming, which is where I live now. And it is going to be a wild ride. And I think it's probably going to be the hardest of the three to write.
Probably.
That's how I portray faith. I'm honest about how following Christ doesn't mean that life is going to be rainbows, glitter, and roses. That sometimes
mm-hmm.
when you follow the Lord and do what he calls you to do, sometimes that means you pay a heavy price. You lose your friends. You get beat up. I was.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to make that commitment. It does come at a cost. And that's in Matthew, I think it's Matthew 9, when they approached Jesus and said, hey, what is it? You know, I want to follow you. And Jesus is like, you know, the Son of Man, like foxes have their holes and, you know, all these animals have their places to go, but the Son of Man doesn't have anywhere to, you know, lay his head. The guy was thinking, ooh, this Jesus guy, he's real popular. If I get with him, I'm going to get notoriety and fame. And that wasn't the case. And Jesus is like, dude, I'm homeless.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And then how many rich people sell everything you have and follow me? Another man is like, hey, I want to follow you. And Jesus, he goes, but you know, I'll do it when it's convenient. I need to go bury my father. And our pastor
mm-hmm.
explained how after a year they would then put him in some kind of tomb thing. But and Jesus
yeah.
is like, no, you know, let the dead bury their own. And so this full commitment to Christ, and this is, I feel like, is not talked about a lot with young
enough.
People.
No.
Enough. And there's a lack of honesty there. So I kind of deal with that, and I think that's why it's been difficult for me to get traction, but I'm hoping
mm-hmm.
the more that we can talk about it and the more people see the need for that, that my books and my stories will get traction. They're not just written for young adults. They're written for anybody who has any teenagers in their lives, anybody
yes.
who works with kids, parents, grandparents, aunts, and uncles. If you know
mm-hmm.
a teenager, you need to read this book, whether the teenager is a Christian or not. If they're in public school, you need to read this book. If your
mm-hmm.
kids just live
mm-hmm.
in the community, you need to read my book, because human trafficking can happen to anyone. That can happen anywhere in the U.S.
Yeah, that's another subject I wanted to touch on before we close here. Darcy, because our time is going by fast here. But human trafficking was a big issue in TOS. And I would like to talk about that for the simple reason that I think, despite the fact that you hear about it in the news every so often, I think there are a lot of people in this country, sadly, that still don't understand that it is such a prevalent problem right here in America. They think that it happens in some third world country somewhere.
Yeah.
So would you expound a little bit on what you learned about that?
Yes. So after I finished Spin, I was working on another book, and my bloodthirsty crit partners told me I was writing the wrong book, that I needed to explore Wendy's introduction into Kisri's family. I'm like, fine, but I need a major plot point. I can't just write a book about that. So I was sitting in Sunday school at my church in Lakewood, Colorado. And one of the women, they have a group called Standing Against Human Trafficking. And I didn't know much about it at the time, but she showed a video by Truckers Against Trafficking, which is an organization of Christian truckers. And I think some of them are not Christian as well, but they're just truckers who are really committed to rescuing girls and boys, I must say, out of this horrible thing. But anyway, they showed this video about human trafficking, and it was about these two cousins in Kansas, I think. It was middle America. They were going
mm-hmm.
to Wendy's to get Frosties, and they were abducted and by some pimps because they were, you know, blonde-haired, blue-eyed girls. Those are some of the traits that are in the highest demand with traffickers and their clientele. Well, I was just horrified. These two girls were rescued by some TAT truck drivers. They were being sold at truck stops, and that's how they were rescued out, as a truck driver gave them information and offered, you know, he followed their protocol. TAT has a very specific protocol on how to rescue girls, and I actually use that in my book, and I'll let people read that.
Yes.
But they talked about how they, you know, beat the younger one to control the older one, how they threatened to kill their families, how they would torture them, and then they would drug them up and make them dependent on drugs. And they are always looking for people. I talked to my color guard girls. I said, hey, guys, you know anything about human trafficking? And I'm like, what's that? And
wow.
As I look at their sexy pictures on the internet, you know, kids are posting like sexy pictures, you know, and, you know, cleavage and pouty lips.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these traffickers pose as young people on social media, hey, you know, and they make quote unquote friends with these girls and boys. They look for vulnerable kids. They look for kids who seem to somewhat be loners, to somewhat be craving love and attention. So they're looking for certain vulnerability signs, and they make friends with them. Hey, and eventually after a few months, they're like, let's meet in public or let's meet somewhere. And that's when
mm-hmm.
they abduct them. They kidnap them. And the nightmare begins. There's also been ruses where, hey, modeling agencies, you know, we're looking for young girls to model, you know, we're going to pay you like $5,000 a month. And or there's even the let's go overseas and be a nanny programs. There's a
yes.
lot of these kind of things. And I address a little bit of this in TOS. That's how Kisri kind of the light bulb goes off. Maybe they're stuck in human trafficking. But there's all of these phishing devices that are used today to grab young innocent because they want innocent. There's a high price to be the first to violate a girl.
Yes.
There are websites. The problem is not the trafficking itself, but the demand. The demand for these girls. There is an appetite in America, mostly men, for these girls. So
mm-hmm.
if there wasn't a demand, there wouldn't be a business. So the root of the problem really is the demand. What
yes.
are we as a country doing about that? Yes, we're talking about human trafficking. You're seeing it more in the news. Colorado is one of the hottest spots, that I-25 corridor, like where
mm-hmm.
I-76, I-70, I-25. That is one of the hottest spots in the country. You go to sporting
wow.
events, Super Bowl, all these World Series. That is when the trafficking spikes. And most of those girls, they're not from some third world country. Most of the missing kids, these girls that you see, and even young boys, because there's a growing demand for young boys. And I actually have a boy in my story because I want people to know this is not just young girls.
Right.
But a lot of those missing children, they're probably sucked into the world of human trafficking. And these traffickers make it very difficult to get them out. And again,
oh,
I address
yeah.
this in my book, and this is where the plot of Catch carries on. If a girl is rescued out of trafficking, she's not safe. Those pimps
mm-hmm.
do not want to let go of their money-making object, and they really objectify these girls. They either will kill them or disable them in some way where they cannot testify or be alive or be able to testify. This is a horrid, horrid crime that everybody is afraid of. We don't want to believe that the world is that dark and sordid. But
mm-hmm.
you have to force yourself, and I challenge Christians to force themselves to read the story. Yes, they are graphic, but you have to know how horrible and graphic some of these girls' stories are in order to have the compassion and want to be able to do something. So I wrote TOSS in such a way, and TOSS is everything kind of tossed up in the air because there's just chaos everywhere as Carrie and Wendy are disappeared and they get sucked in. And Wendy is abducted by somebody that she knew. It's not
yes.
a stranger abduction, and I wanted to make sure that with how I spun my story. Because
mm-hmm.
this is where just awareness and common sense come into play. So that's where the whole human trafficking thing came from. Was I watched that video in Sunday school class, and it was like a light bulb. It's like God said in my head, that's what I want you to write about. That's your plot in your story. That's what I want people to be aware of. And
well, very
I,
good.
I
you did a good job.
Cause
of course, I read the book.
So
yeah, you did a very good job with that, Darcy.
Thank you. And it was hard. It took me longer to write TOSS than I wanted to because I had to read a lot of hard stuff that would make
oh,
me
yeah.
cry. I would have
mm-hmm.
to take days. It is traumatizing, but it's reality. I mean, if it's traumatizing for me to read about a girl's story, reading all these stories, and I just started with Truckers Against Trafficking, and I followed all the links off of their website to other organizations that work with these girls' stories. I mean, it will undo you, and I just had to step back every now and then. And then I
oh,
had
yeah.
to just really pray through, well, how do I portray this? How do I portray a rape? How do I portray without getting gratuitous? How do I take
yeah.
the reader to the very edge without crossing those lines, but taking them to where their heart is pounding and that sense of dread is just burrowing deep inside of their stomach? Because
mm-hmm.
I want the reader to feel what Wendy is feeling. I want them to feel what Carrie is going through, you know, when they torture Carrie to control Wendy. So it was a very, very difficult book to write. But
goodness, I'm sure.
I finally, thanks to my bloodthirsty crit partners, we got it. I got through it and got it out there. I was surprised there weren't a lot of edits. That's how good my crit partners are, is pretty much we can pick a manuscript clean. So,
uh-huh.
But we do have a blog called The Right Nook. It's probably something I should include in when I send you my social media.
Oh,
I will for the website,
yeah.
The Right Nook. We have over 80 writing lessons, and it's by myself and my bloodthirsty crit partners who are known for picking manuscripts clean. We all teach at conferences and do a lot of writing education nationally
mm-hmm.
and in our communities as well. So if any of your listeners are interested in writing, The Right Nook is a great resource to
learn
some of the techniques that I use and some of my friends who are best-selling authors use.
Well, that sounds great, Darcy. Well, we're about at the end of our time. What I just love is when people share their heart. So thank you for doing that today, Darcy.
Oh,
it's
welcome.
Obvious that these topics, the bullying topic, the trafficking topic, young people in general, the color guard, all of this is just what drives you. And that's what makes for a great show. So thank you.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
God bless you and have a wonderful rest of your day.
Okay.
And I wish
too,
you
Patty.
Much success
thank
with
you.
Your series, with your guarded series. And I'll be excited to see that third book come out.
Yes, and then I'm working on a contemporary suspense, and I'm doing research for some historical suspenses that are going to deal with the history of Wyoming. So I think I can make a career out
awesome.
Of the history of Wyoming because it is crazy. So,
okay,
yeah,
well,
I will be writing for a long
so
time.
Much. Listeners, once again, thank you for listening today. In closing, when you look back on the dark periods in your life, you may find they were not quite as dark as they seemed at the time. And when the light does shine again, it is so much brighter than you remembered. Look forward to seeing you back here next week for another show. In the meantime, don't forget to go to pattysheen.com, pattishene.com, and you will find information about Darcy. You'll find access to this show and to all of the other shows that we have recorded, and you'll be able to, like I say, connect with Darcy on her social media and so such, and our other guests as well. So God bless you. Have a good week.
There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit